Otra, again, yo, you know what, David? You want to fuck with me, right?
Do it.
Do what?
Indio from the Bronx.
I'm Indio from the Bronx. I'm leaving Manhattan right now. I live in a building. I was set up, bro.
All right.
I live in a building that is infected with crackheads, dolphins, and all about. Even pills here.
It's true. I've been there.
And this Davies right here used to be one of my old customers. And right now, his life is straight, and I hope he stays that way. Dope Nation.
Stay strong.
Stay strong. Dopey. Doos.
Toodles.
Doodles. Doodles.
Toodles.
Toodles. Toodles.
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? This is the Firecracker, straight from Atlanta, Georgia. This is a little verse I put together for the Dopey Nation. I kept it short for Dave. Yo, man, this don't matter if you sober or you high. As long as you in that fight, man. We all feel you. We know where you've been. We've been there. We are there. We love you. Yeah, little verse. You know what I'm saying? For the dopey. Stay strong. Yo. 16 right here. Yo. This is the firecracker. I'm reporting to you live. Doesn't matter if you're sober or just sort of getting high. This is a message filled with hope and patience. I hope you make it. Being sober is amazing. Shout out to the Dopey Nation. Can't give out my whole location. Hashtag anonymous. I'm in the depths of 12 steps. Searching for the promises. Tomorrow is a vision. Why is it so blurry? I'ma find my way home. Mama, don't worry. To the ones still lost, please take this as a warning. Got sober, so I'm dry. But outside is still storming. Every relapse from a weed sack kept stepping like my knee steps. I pray that I get this, I forget this, I don't need that. I see that, I need to say goodbye to my party days. Mostly fun and partly pain. Word up to Artie Lang. Stay strong, Dave. Keep carrying the message. From New York to Georgia, you are such a fucking blessing. Can't forget Chris when I scribble down these doodles. We miss you, homie. R.I.P. Fucking toodles. Yeah, firecracker. You know what I mean? A little bit of dope. Yeah, Dopey Nation. Yeah. Peace.
Hello and welcome to Dopey, the podcast about drugs, addiction, recovery, and dumb shit. And I'm Dave. And today is a very exciting day in the history of Dopey because my beautiful, what do you call yourself?
Partner.
My beautiful partner, Linda, has decided to come on the podcast. So say hello.
Hello.
How are you, Lynn?
I'm good. I'm a little nervous.
What are you nervous about?
This is...
What's different about this than 20 minutes ago?
Well, we're talking to a microphone.
You can ignore the microphone.
As you move it closer.
As I nudge it closer to you. Now, Linda has been somebody who has lived with Dopey without being too engaged with Dopey. She's hated Dopey. She's loved Dopey. She's been impressed with Dopey, annoyed with Dopey. And here you are on the show. So what do you think about all that?
Oy. Well, I really respect what Dopey is, but it's where Dopey came from a place that was really hard.
Well, yeah, you want to jump right into that section? The section I want to jump into is it was 3 years ago in January, and Linda and I had just reconciled to get back together, but I hadn't told her that I was doing this podcast with Chris. And we were in this diner and having a nice time, and like something good had happened with Dopey. Like I think we had like 50 downloads or something. Something had happened and I was like all excited.
I think I snooped on your phone. It's probably what happened.
But what do you think you snooped?
I snoop on his phone sometimes because, you know, trust is always a thing. And I think I saw when I looked at his phone, he's in the bathroom, something about some sort of Dopey podcast, and I had no idea about it. So when he came back from the bathroom, I said, well, what's Dopey? And then here we are.
No, and she freaked out. Do you remember? You got very upset because...
Well, I did because Dave was talking about me and our story and our life on a podcast. And podcasts are still kind of new in a way. So I didn't really even know exactly what a podcast was. And he, you know, there weren't a lot of people involved in it at that point. Well, him and Chris, and then not a ton of listeners, but... Now
there were no listeners.
But it still felt a bit, revealing, and I didn't know what to make of it. So I got upset and I said, "Take it down."
And then I called up Chris, and I said, "Take it down." And Chris was like, "Really? Do I have to take it down?" And I was like, "You have to take it down." I was like, "Just take it down, right. Take it down." And Chris took it down, and then. I don't remember why you changed your mind about it. Dopey was done. Linda had effectively ended Dopey. You had ended it.
Well, I don't think I ever really changed my mind. I think those beginning episodes were about, you know, our story. And I don't think I felt comfortable with them being shared until kind of recently.
Yeah, because I'm re-releasing them now.
Well, I don't know how much of a choice I have, but, you know, I'm okay with it now because now Dopey's a whole different thing.
But I think at the time you had seen the potential in Dopey more than I had when you had, you know, conceded to letting us do it.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, I think it could be helpful to somebody, and
yes.
and I think that you're giving a voice to it. I just don't. And you said, I just don't want you to tell your stories.
Right.
And then like. For like 10 episodes, I told stories about like when me and Dave Kennedy snuck into the Knicks game and stories like that, that just weren't about like risky business.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably at episode 23, I was like, I have to just tell the stories. So I started telling the stories.
Well, you know, and also because I know that you want the podcast to be like really fun. And that time wasn't fun for me. So that was always the big conflict too, is like I knew. But you're also very good at telling the stories in a funny, fun way. But, you know, for me, it was a really horrible time.
But the Dopey wasn't...
Looking back now, I don't know, some things I still can't laugh at. But there's definitely other things that I can look back now and say, that was so crazy, and we can kind of laugh at it. But it took a while, you know, it's taken some time. And that was still pretty fresh.
But Dopey was certain. Well, the relapse was fresh, and like there was a lot of pain and crazy shit. But the show wasn't about. I'm looking at the microphone configuration. I got lost for a second. The show wasn't about like the shit that had happened, like with us.
It came from that.
How do you figure?
Well, that was a part. I mean, nothing exists without what's happened before it. So if that didn't happen between us and with our daughter and with, you know, all of that, Dopey wouldn't exist. You wouldn't be doing a podcast called Dopey if that whole shit didn't go down with me and you and our child. You'd probably still be using. Who knows? Maybe you'd be dead. Who knows where you would be at today? So that really did lead up until to even the podcast being here. I feel like our experience and our history is part of why this podcast exists. So I feel like it affects me more seriously than maybe it affects you. I don't know.
What do you mean? How does it affect me, you, more than it affects
you,
me?
You use humor a lot with it, and I still didn't feel ready to find humor in... I don't know, I guess what's a war story, right? Like you tell these war stories and it's helpful for people and they come and they call in and tell funny stories, but I couldn't find the humor, so it was hard for me to be okay with having that story shared on this podcast.
First of all, you guys need to know, I'm sure some of you know this, but you need to know that Linda and I met through Todd, who died... When did he die?
3 months ago.
3 months ago this week. And I had met Todd in Ithaca, and...
I met Todd in Oswego.
Todd had gotten kicked out of Ithaca, and he had to transfer to Oswego.
That's where I went to school.
And he met Linda.
Yes.
And Linda and Todd were very fast friends.
Mm-hmm. Very, very fast friends. Very good friends, but, like, crazy friends. Todd was the... biggest partier and so much fun to be with, and very quickly swept you up into his world. And well, I actually introduced Todd. It's actually, I hate even talking about it, but I actually introduced Todd to hard drugs.
Here we go. Dopey exclusive.
Yeah. No, but it's, you know, well, anyway, so he was a big, you know, very big pothead, and you know, we all drank a lot, but I kind of liked coke, and there was a lot of it in Oswego for some reason. And so I was also very into fish at the time, and Todd was very into fish, and we wound up going to a big fish festival, and I brought some coke with me, and I will never forget, we were sitting in the tent, and I gave Todd a little bit, and he took, you know, a bump, and I remember his face changing, and like a light in his eyes, and he just looked at me, and I saw that he just fell in love with that feeling, and he like jumped out of the tent and just started like running around the festival, and I don't think I saw him again until he came back wanting more coke.
Right.
And from that point forward, Todd and I, when we went back to college, we started to do just tons of coke. And for me, it was just, you know, doing it and then, you know, feeling guilty the next day and you know, but then wanting it the following weekend. But for Todd, it took on a whole different, you know, thing where he started selling it. He'd want to go on like road trips to buy tons of it. He'd drive up to Syracuse. It became everything to him. And then it just never stopped. You know, and then when eventually he moved to Manhattan, and I was living in Manhattan around the time.
You live in Queens.
I lived in Queens. That was like all he wanted to do. We used to have a joke when we'd go out for drinks about like how long it would take for us to say like, let's call, you know, the guy. And I think we usually would get like two beers in where one of us would be like, all right, you know. And but, you know, unfortunately, I don't think I lived with Todd, and so obviously there was some sober time, but I don't think I ever later in life hung out with him without doing coke.
Or drinking.
In the end... Smoking weed. And I loved him, but I mean, how much of a great friendship is that when you're always, you know, getting fucked up?
I was sober with Todd because we would go to detox together, or we'd run out of drugs together.
Yeah.
But, like, Todd didn't like to not have drugs. And what was I going to say?
So that's how we met, is that when we all wound up convening in Manhattan later, years later.
No. Oh, okay. How we met, Todd was living in my apartment, and Todd was living on my floor. You know, I had just broken up with this girlfriend, and I was depressed, and Todd decided to move in, and I was like, that's cool if you bring the drugs. And he decided he was going to sleep in the kitchen under the table, but he never did. He always slept on the living room, on the floor of the studio. and one night, Linda and her friend Carrie came to see Todd, and Linda was just so beautiful. We were like 22, 23. Mm-hmm. I was just like, holy shit! And somehow I managed to sweep Linda off her feet, and we made out. That night, and a little bit more, but we mostly just made out. And
well, Dave was trying to impress me with his vinyl collection.
I had a really good record collection.
Like, it was all like jazz records that you had ready to go if a girl ever came over.
It worked out. It totally worked out. No, I had good records. I had other records besides jazz records. I had good reggae records and good rock.
I remember the John Coltrane being played a lot.
I don't think so. I was never a big John Coltrane person. Aww. But I was, you know, you thought I was very, like, what did you think?
I definitely didn't think you were an addict, you know, like involved in what you were involved in.
I don't think we were at that point.
You weren't at that point?
I don't think so.
I mean, I'm sure I was doing lots of coke, but that was just...
We didn't do coke that night, though.
Me and Todd probably did.
Well, I don't know.
But what did I think? I thought you were very cool. You know, I thought you were very, and you were pretty quiet.
I doubt it.
Which you're not, you know, you're not anymore. I don't know.
I don't know what happened to that, but
you didn't talk a lot, and you stared at me a lot. You just kind of sat quietly, like just looking at everything and taking every. I thought you were different than you are, quite frankly.
What did you think I was?
I just thought you were more like introspective and quiet.
I'm very introspective
and more of a little more of an introvert. Like you were quiet. I thought you were a little bit shy.
I don't think you have a. I think you're confusing me with some other Jewish guy you might have met.
I was really drunk and doing coke, so right. I don't really know.
Right.
And you were pretty but you were a little aggressive in the you know with me as far as like hooking up. Whatever. Who cares?
Anyway.
I liked you.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then she left and I just didn't think we'd ever see each other again. I didn't pursue it. You lived in Long Island and I lived in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then I always would ask Todd about her because she was very, very, very beautiful. And I'd be like, "What's up with Linda? What's up with Linda?" And he'd be like, "I don't know." And then me and Todd became heroin addicts, you know, and I didn't ask anymore.
You didn't care anymore.
Yeah. And then, you know, we all went our separate ways.
Right?
And it all worked out the way it worked out.
Right.
And 13 years later, my mother had just died.
Right.
And I was trying to get...
After you had been with someone else for quite a long time.
Yeah, I'd been with somebody else for a long time. And my mother had just died. And I was
lived out west.
I had lived in California. And I come back and Todd said, "Oh, do you want to go out with Linda?" Or something, right?
We were all going to go out to something.
We went to some terrible show, and I walked in there, and there was Linda at the bar, and very beautiful still, 13 years later, and I was very aggressive again.
Yeah, you really, that's been a theme in this relationship.
I kind of don't want to talk about this on the show. But we wound up.
Asking the questions.
We wound up doing coke. And what if your mother
that's
listens?
That's another theme.
What if your mother listens to this?
I don't think she will.
Why not? She listens to the show.
I don't know.
How could you live with that?
I think everything turned out all right.
Right. So we wound up dating. And Linda also had a prescription for, what was it, Ativan?
Ativan.
And like... We did coke that night, and then we went back to her house, and she was like, I don't think she realized, I told her what a drug addict I was.
Well, this was back in the day when you could just get, like, whatever you want, you know, and I remember I had a psychiatrist, because I was taking...
But you could still get whatever you want.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Lina.
But what I mean is, my point was, I had told you my whole story about, like, that I had been a heroin addict, and... You know,
right, but I didn't understand that Ativan was also something you'd be very excited about. I didn't know all of that.
I didn't know either. I'd never had Ativan, but I was like, if we're doing coke, I need to have benzos or something. So my dad's going to listen to this too, by the way. Well, my dad's definitely going to listen to this.
All right, well, if I'm not upset about it, then I don't know why you are.
I'm just letting you know.
Don't you think that there's much worse stories out there that you've told about yourself and you're worried about this one?
That's
you're worried
true.
About doing like a little coke and taking an Ativan?
Okay.
Are you worried for me? Like
was,
my
yeah.
my perfect image
yeah,
being.
I was worried about your perfect
I
image.
I really don't care. Anyway, so I had a psychiatrist. I was getting an antidepressant, and he was giving me the strongest doses of Ativan. Like every time I'd go, he'd give me like, I mean, I didn't really even have I did not have a need for that, but every time I went, he'd just give me so I had tons of it, is the point. And so Dave quickly realized that I was like this, you know, Ativan dispenser. Even though he liked me, I'm sure that the fact that I had, you know, bottles of Ativan made coming to my apartment that much more enticing.
It was. It was good to have a, well, it was like, because I didn't have pills.
And I didn't know that Dave had a issue with heroin. Like, I didn't understand the magnitude of his drug problem, or else I wouldn't have, you know, shared that, or I don't know. Shouldn't do it anyway, but...
You had. I told you about me as a heroin addict, but it's like it doesn't matter. It's like we were naive to the whole thing.
Yeah,
and you know, and I wasn't doing heroin when we got together.
Well, but you were though.
No, I wasn't.
Do you remember how we realized that you had used?
Yes.
Would you like to share that story?
You could tell the story if you want.
So, Dave said that he wasn't using heroin anymore, and I believed him because you know. Stupid, and but he was because he was still hanging out with Todd all the time, and I know how Todd is with me with you know drugs, so I now you know could only imagine. And so Dave came over one night, and we were, again, Dave was being very aggressive. And we were being intimate, and he couldn't perform, which is incredibly unlike him. And
well, I could perform, I just couldn't come.
Right. And it was so unusual and so just not the norm of our relationship. And I was getting upset. First, I was upset. It's me and what's going on. And then I just, like, you know, a light bulb went off, and I said, you've used drugs. Like, I just made that connection. And he admitted, you know, the one thing with Dave is that he's very honest. You know, even, you know, he will always be very honest at some point. And that's why
at some point.
And that's why we're together, because he is a very honest person. And that's an important piece. But so he admitted it, that he had used heroin, and that's, I guess that's what happens when you use heroin. I've never tried heroin before. And I kicked him out. I said, "Get the hell out. I'm done. You know, I don't want anything to do with you." And I kicked him out of my apartment. And then, yeah.
And then I begged you back.
He begged me back.
Here, sit a little closer to the mic. I don't want my voice to be much louder than yours. Sit up straight. What are you doing?
I'm chilling.
You don't chill so hard. And then we dated. And Linda, at that point, you know, like, I smoked weed every day. Linda didn't like smoking weed.
Well, I couldn't handle weed. It made me weird. Like, it didn't feel good.
Yeah, wasn't a stoner. Weed made her paranoid. Weed made you paranoid.
Or actually, really ridiculous.
What?
Weed.
What?
Like, I would act ridiculous on it. Like, it didn't affect me the way it affected other people.
Right, but I think there's a lot of people out there that are like that. I think that that's true for a lot of
people.
And it
made me, and eventually what happened with me with weed, and I know that with clients too, I work in a drug treatment program, and for a lot of people, it starts to make them anxious after a while, and it stops being fun.
It made you anxious immediately.
It did.
It never was fun for you, weed.
In the very, very beginning, I had those, like, times where you just laugh.
Right.
You know, and, like, music sounded really good, and then eventually it just became, everything was too clear, and then it, I don't know, just, I didn't like it. It wasn't fun. But you kept smoking.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. And but then I started to drink, you know, but then I drink a lot. So I would do a lot of drinking, and he would do a lot of weed. And
I would steal your Ativans.
He'd steal
and we
my
would
Ativan.
Do coke every once
We'd
in a while.
We'd do coke sometimes.
But, like, when we did coke, I always hated the coke. Like, you were just saying, like, me, her, and Todd would go out, and they would get coke, and I refused to not do it, even though I didn't like it.
Yeah, we hated that. We're like, don't use our coke then if you don't like it.
I would
like,
use
like,
the
use
coke.
Like, use it and bitch about it, and we're like, this sucks.
Yeah, I would do that.
Like, just go away.
But every night, it would always end badly with the three of us just sitting there like, why did we do this?
Because it's not fun. Coke's not fun after like an hour, you know, after like an hour. And then you get that raw,
terrible
edgy,
feeling.
And then like never stops. And then it's horrible. It's like the worst drug ever.
Chris loved shooting coke. That was Chris's whole favorite thing. And I really wish that Chris had been alive. Like, we had always planned to do this episode with Chris. And I just think he would have loved to do it. He would have loved to facilitate it. You never even met Chris.
I know.
But we did live very far apart, and it didn't. And we had.
Chris was for like when I would talk to him, we had fun, kind of making fun of Dave together a little bit. Like we clicked on that, so I think it would have been. We would have had a fun dynamic.
Right.
Because he got you, obviously, you know, and as a very close friend, and you're also my very close friend, and I think I think it would have been really special.
It would have been really funny too. I mean, that's the thing. Like I
us talking is probably kind of boring.
You don't say that. That's one of the only rules of Dopey, is you don't put down the show while the show is happening. And I've broken that rule a million times, but that's one of the only rules, is you don't put down the show while the show is
happening. Sorry if this is boring.
You just broke the cardinal rule of the show.
Okay, I won't say it again.
I don't think there are any other rules of the show. Oh, yeah, don't say things to upset you. That was the only other rule of the show.
All right,
you can't say anything to upset Linda.
You can say it to my face.
So then what happened? We were dating. Linda was drinking a lot. We were getting into a lot of fights. Like, we would go out and you'd be really drunk.
I thought I was going to look good in these stories, but it's turning out that I'm a real loser.
Well, the truth of the matter
she had Ativan.
Yeah.
She
She did coke.
Was an alcoholic.
Serious drinking problem. Well, the truth is the truth. And, like, if that
were... And you know what? The reality, you know, whether I'm an addict or what, but, you know, the semantics of it all. During that time, I did have a problem. I did have a problem. I was drinking all the time, doing coke, taking Ativan, you know, smoking. I mean, like, that's kind of problematic. I mean, I was definitely had missed work because of it. I had big bouts of horrible depression and guilt and shit. I mean, you know, I wasn't like, I didn't lose my job and I didn't, you know, I didn't like lose family and I didn't, you know, like steal, but I definitely had, I definitely had a problem. I mean, I know that. And, during that time I met Dave, it was probably at its worst, which is kind of interesting that we met during that time.
How do you figure?
Well, I was, you know, you were kind of at your low as far as, you know, your mom had passed away. You had just moved back here. You were starting to use heroin.
But that's not the truth.
And then you met me, and then I was using all sorts of crap,
too. That's not
too,
the truth.
And then we met.
But that's not the truth. The truth was I had stopped doing heroin on June 4th, the summer before. We had met – I don't know why that date just sticks in my head. We had met – my mother died – I don't know the date my mother died, but I remember the date I stopped doing heroin. My mother died in, I think, early November. Mm-hmm. And then we met in the middle of December, I think. Yeah, I blank on the date my mother died. I think it was early November. But I hadn't done heroin. I had done pills here and there, and I smoked weed every day. And I did heroin the one time with Todd when that happened where I couldn't come. And then I did heroin again with Todd when we were together. And
all right. So then relationship began at that point and we started dating. And we were dating for, you know, let's say what, 6 months?
Not even
6 months.
I'd say 5 months.
5 months. And my breasts were getting gigantic. And I didn't even realize it because I was just, you know, like living my life. And we were obviously partying a lot and just, you know, being in the city and going to shows and just, you know, having fun. And Dave kept saying to me, like, are you pregnant? And I'm like, no, I can't get pregnant. And, you know, I didn't think that was possible. And he's like, and so every day he'd look at me, we'd ride the subway in from my apartment into the city to work. And he'd be like, Linda, your boobs are so big. He's like, I think you're pregnant. I'm like, no, da, da, da. So I'll never forget. We were pulling into, I think it was the 59th Street stop. And you stick $10. Do you remember this?
Uh-huh.
He sticks $10 in my pocket and goes, go into Walgreens and buy a pregnancy test, please. He's like, I really think you're pregnant. And I'm like, all right. I just didn't think it was possible for, you know, that was probably my own headspace was so cuckoo to not think that was possible when we were having sex quite a bit. So anyway, I go into Walgreens and I get the pregnancy test and I was working on, I think, 23rd Street, as a social worker. And I remember going into the bathroom and taking the test and like within like half a second, like a giant plus sign shows up and I'm like, holy shit. And because, you know, obviously we were not parent material at this point.
No, and, we were not. And like, but we were old enough.
I was 35 and he was.
No, you were 34 and I was 36. And I remember I was at work. I worked in the same restaurant and I was sitting and you called me and you said you were like, sit down or something.
He's like, I'm waiting tables. I really can't sit.
No, it was in the morning. I remember the restaurant was empty. And you called me, and I had given you the money for the pregnancy test. And I sat in the corner, and you told me that you were pregnant. And I swear to God, you know, in like a movie where like the camera pulls out and the background moves in, you know, that like that crazy. That's what I could feel myself in that moment. Like I was like, oh my God, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, you know, imagine as a woman, like, that's your response on the other end. Oh.
What can I say? Yes, baby. Like, this is the moment we've been waiting for. We can have a family, finally.
I know.
I mean, like, I was living in Jim. You guys know Jim. I was living in Jim's mother's apartment, you know, in Jim's mother's crazy apartment with the bird and the cats and, like, the fucking like hoarder material everywhere, and I was not ready. I had, you know, a drug problem. I was a heroin addict. I worked in this restaurant, and I was not ready to be a father, even right. though Linda said she's going to have the baby if I was ready or not.
Well, he begged me to not have the baby, and I'm at, mind you, I wasn't. I wasn't having this like maternal.
I didn't beg you not drive. To have, I didn't beg you not to have the baby.
It wasn't like I was.
I said I don't think it's the time for us to be having the baby.
Right.
I didn't beg you not to have the baby. And I also said, if you want to have the baby, I'm here.
Okay. Well, it didn't start off like that. Because I was 35 years old, and I wasn't, again, not pining.
She was the most beautiful 35-year-old you could ever see.
I wasn't pining for a baby, but when I found out I was pregnant at 35 years old, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but for me, I was going to have that baby. And Dave did, I know he's saying, he goes, maybe we should reconsider. No, he kind of wanted me to not have the baby.
I said, I don't think it's a good idea.
Right.
But I didn't beg you not to have the baby.
I told him that that's fine and he's free to not be involved, but I am most definitely having the baby. And he did say eventually that he
wanted, that in that conversation.
Maybe a few days later.
It was not a few days later.
He said he you know, would be there for me and for the baby.
You make it sound so shitty, though.
Well, because it did turn out to be pretty shitty.
What do you mean? We have this beautiful house. We do, have two kids.
That's like fast forward how many years?
All I know is that when I left, and I went to my father's apartment, and I saw my father, and I said, sit down. You know, and I told him what had happened.
Oh,
and
your poor dad.
And then I
your
left.
Your dad must have had it. Did your dad, like, faint?
No.
What did he say? Did he say, oy vey?
Probably. And then I left his apartment, okay, and I went back to get the N train. You know, on 23rd and Broadway, and I literally fell down the steps. Like, yeah, I was so nervous and
sick.
Maybe
that hurt.
And I like fell down the steps, and yeah. I was like, And I wasn't doing dope then. I was just smoking pot, and I was terrified, and smoking cigarettes, and I was terrified. I would steal Ativans from you occasionally, but I was mostly just smoking weed. And is that when we moved into the place in Astoria? Or?
Yeah, so I was living on a fourth floor walk-up about 13 blocks from the subway. So I was like, I can't live here and be pregnant. So I said, we have to find another apartment. So we found, so we started looking and looking, and then we wound up finding a place closer to the train, which was only a third floor walk-up.
Well, she picked such this terrible apartment. Horrible.
It was like the worst apartment ever. It was filled with roaches. It was like, but whatever. It was close to the train, and I don't know. But so then we moved in together.
It was a terrible
apartment.
It was
horrible. It was the worst.
And I was like, we shouldn't live here. It's not nice. And Linda has this thing, like, that she doesn't like nice things, which is probably why she wound up with me. It was like, she was like, I don't like nice things. I don't want a nice apartment. I feel guilty if I have too much. And like, I was like, Linda, you're going to be you're pregnant. You know, we're talking about carrying you up four floors, the baby, the shit.
Roller,
right. The building was disgusting.
Yeah.
Remember, there's no hot water in the shower. It was cheap, though. That was good.
Yeah.
It was way cheaper. I mean, I'm sure you couldn't get a place like that so cheap now.
It was as bad as it gets.
It was bad. And she was, and then her parents, God bless them, like anything Linda does, her parents are like, oh, this is the most wonderful thing in the world. And like, we're living in this shitty fucking apartment. And they come and they go, Lynn is so cute. Oh. And my dad is like, really? You live here? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. He was not supportive.
And they were like, oh, it's going to be so... And I was like, this place is so gross.
Well, we're optimists. We're always thinking that things are going to be great. And you guys don't look at it like that.
We're more realists. I think we're more realists.
So anyway. Yeah, we moved into the apartment. And but while I was pregnant, you were using.
Right. Well, no, while you were pregnant.
Because I have a memory of going to a, not a Lamaze class. It was like,
oh,
a, it
man.
Was like a
live birth class.
It was our birthing class where we have to learn how to have a, you know, natural birth. And we're all sitting around with all these couples. I think it was in the Village. I don't know.
It was on 20th Street. It was on 17th Street or 18th Street between 6th and 5th Avenue. Right. I remember exactly
so
where
So everyone's sitting around and they're all like, you know, all the
yuppies.
The couples are very like, they're very, you know, in love and they're rubbing, you know, the husband's rubbing the belly and they're all
alert.
Know, they're all like, you know, and I look over at Dave at one point and he's nodding out.
Yeah.
Next to me. And of course his excuse is always, I'm just really tired from my job.
No, but fucking...
And I'm tired, too, because I'm pregnant. So part of me is like, okay, yeah, I guess I'm tired, too. But, like, looking back...
I was nodding,
why was my partner, like, sleeping? And everybody else is like, this is, like, a pretty important moment in a couple's, you know, thing.
Oh, so, this, yeah. this your appearance,
well, listen.
Your appearance on Dopey is gonna ruin our whole relationship. So
now people know why this is... Why you know, this wasn't an easy thing to...
What happened, though... What happened was I wasn't using and stuff, but I was very scared about, you know, our future, the baby, the unknown. Mm-hmm. And I was so used to using that I wanted to hang out with Todd as much as possible.
Oh, enter Todd.
And I remember I'd be like, let's have Todd over for dinner, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And Todd would come out to Astoria. And I didn't ask him to bring dope. And one time he just brought dope. And like, yeah. You remember that?
And, I don't remember that because you guys hid it from me.
And Linda would go to bed early, and then me and Todd would do heroin and watch TV or play video games or whatever and stay up late, like, because we were such winners at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Todd had hooked me up with a benzo dealer named Phoenix, who I would buy pills off of him in Union Square all the time. And just things just sort of...
Snowballed.
They snowballed. And
and as his stuff was snowballing, I was getting more and more pregnant. And
well, the baby was growing.
Anybody out there has been pregnant, you know that you're in your own world when you're pregnant. You're dealing with your body, you're dealing with nesting, you're dealing with the baby coming. So I didn't have the same, you know, I wasn't as alert to him acting weird. I do remember I used to always say, something's wrong with your eyes. I guess his pupils were pinned, and I could see that, but I didn't know what it was. So right. I'd say, "What's wrong with your eyes?"
They were glazed. And I'd look like a zombie.
I was like, "Your eye? What's wrong with your eyes?" And he'd always have his reasons. And honestly, I was so pregnant and just so like, I didn't even not that I didn't care, but I was like, okay, like I didn't like give him the third degree because I was just so caught up in my own life and the baby and everything.
But not to mention, I was smoking tons of weed and I was smoking cigarettes. And remember, you wanted me to quit smoking, so you sent me to the psychiatrist to get me on Wellbutrin. To get me off
the
cigarettes.
Yeah, and then you got the Wellbutrin to give him Xanax.
So I go to get the Wellbutrin script, and the guy's like, this... And I told him my whole drug history. And the guy was like, well, this might make you feel a little bit edgy. And I was like, oh, I don't want to feel edgy. And he was like, well, you know, he goes, maybe I should prescribe you a benzo. I said, that sounds like a really good idea. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, what benzos do you like? And I said, I prefer 2 milligram Xanax sticks. And I go, and I don't have much money, so could you please write the script so it take as needed? You know, and so he gives me this crazy huge Xanax bottle, and I didn't.
So you can't, that's what I meant about earlier, like you can't do that anymore. Like what my psychiatrist gave me with that Ativan and this guy with the Xanax, like psychiatrists will not do that anymore. They're much smarter. So back when we were getting
I'm sure there are a sprinkling of psychiatrists out there that still do.
But do you remember that I contacted the psychiatrist?
Alinda is so, she's hardcore. Like when, also there was this woman who I had been friends with, And I'd run into her.
You're trying to get clonopins from her.
And like Linda snoops, she's just snoops.
Oh yeah.
So she snooped.
And I'll never stop.
She snooped
my... And that's an ongoing fight in this household.
My Facebook messages, and she saw that I was trying to get clonopin, so she just wrote this crazy message to this woman, like, who do you think you are? But, mm-hmm. you know, she, like, scared the shit out of this girl.
I contacted the psychiatrist.
She, like, called the psychiatrist to have him disbarred.
I'm going
to
report him. Because what a fucking idiot. Like, you're going to prescribe a heroin addict? I mean, were you really, if you were really, in fact, honest with him about that, and then he prescribed you Xanax, I mean.
Dude, if I go to a psychiatrist and they want to hear my drug history, I just get off telling the story. You know how I am with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't keep anything to myself with those moments, especially like I also wanted the Wellbutrin. I didn't go
in
there.
And then Dave kept the, I remember you kept the Xanax in our medicine cabinet, and he would break it into these tiniest, teeniest little pieces at first. Like, you were really trying in the beginning to just take it.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he'd break it into these teeny, tiny little pieces to try to, I guess, not, you know, to be responsible. But, I mean, obviously that didn't last long.
Then I would just, in my memory, I would take one a day. And then after Todd and I had used, we started using once a week, and then we started using twice a week.
Right.
And the difference between me and Todd is, like, Todd can pretend he's not going to become addicted, and I just jump right into it. So, like, I found a dealer that I was going to see. Like, I had just set it up that I was going to have dope, but I didn't want to do it every day when you were pregnant, and I didn't.
That was very kind of you.
I was terrified about getting a real habit. It wasn't about being kind. I didn't want to have a real habit.
Right.
You know, I didn't know what to expect with the baby. I didn't.
And then you didn't show up to a couple of, like, the appointments. Like, you started to, like, I remember I have memories of you, like, nodding out on the reclining chair, and I'd just be like, you know, but he'd always say, "I'm just really tired. I'm just really tired." And I was really tired, too. So, I mean, you know, I guess I'm looking back, you feel so stupid as a partner to someone who's using, you know, because you're like, how did I not pick up on this, this, and this? But then you realize, like, well, because I was, like, also had my own life that I was, you know, living and
having my own. It's your first baby. You're with a guy you barely knew. You know what I mean?
And I didn't, you know, and as much as I did my share of partying, my drug use, you know, I did, like, little acid in college, you know, smoked weed, liked coke, and
we did a bunch of coke, but it was never spectrum.
But, like, right. But I mean, I used it a lot, but it's like those drugs are very, like, whatever. Like, I really didn't know anything about heroin. And I didn't know about it. I didn't know the signs of it.
I remember,
very easily say, "I'm tired," and I'd be like, "Well, when you're tired, do you usually, like, nod out like that?" And, like,
well, the funny thing was, I remember now where it had started, and it's not your fault. I just connected to something that you had done, which is at Christmas she had given me Nikki Sixx's book, The Heroin Diaries.
Oh, yeah. And then we got into a fight because you go, "This is triggering me." And then you blamed me, I think.
Listen, just calm.
I think you said you read that book and that's why you used.
I read that book on the train.
Oh, my gosh.
And I got off the train.
Shame on you.
It was before any of the real relapse had started. I got off the train at Prince Street to walk to work, and there's a methadone clinic there, and there's like 10 guys on the corner, and they were obviously buying Xanax. And I was like, I could buy Xanax. So I did. And that was the start.
And do you remember the show that I used to watch every single day that probably didn't help? I used to always watch Intervention of people shooting up heroin.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, do you mind if I watch this?
I didn't mind, though. I liked Intervention at the time. You bringing up Intervention makes me want to talk about the Vice thing, but I'm going to table the Vice thing. Anyway, so I wound up doing dope like 3 days a week. I remember I would go to those live birth classes with the, you know, the little pocket in your jeans. It was full of heroin and pills. Like, I would go to that thing, and it was like, I couldn't imagine, like, a worse scenario to be in, you know, like, to have to be there for you, to have to show up for all the things that are necessary to have the baby, to work, the fear of, like, having a baby, mm-hmm. the fear of us having this life, and, like, and the pressure, you know what I mean? Like, it was like I was really scared. I remember that.
I always knew there was something, like, wrong. Like, deep down inside, I knew there was something wrong. And I kind of felt like I was just going to just do it alone. I'm just going to do it alone. Like, I love Dave, and I...
You love me then?
I loved you, because I always knew what a good man you were. You know, I always knew that there was this really amazing person, but I mean, I had such crazy hormones, and there were times where he'd be so mean and angry, and it was, you know, he's not like that. You're not like that now.
Well, dope does that.
Right, but I know that now, you know, so there's so many things looking back. So there got to a point in time toward the end where, like, I went for a tour of my hospital with my friend. I used to go to all my ultrasound appointments by myself. You know, like, I just started to do things on my own, and because I just knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And I wonder, like, if other people can, you know, relate to that. Like, you know something's off, you know something's wrong, but you ask the person, and they have these reasons and these excuses, and they make sense, But at the same time, your gut is telling you, like, something is seriously wrong. But when you're pregnant or when you have, you know, bills to pay or when you have response, you have to keep going. So that's, you know, so that's what we did. And that leads into, you know, when I had the baby, and we had the baby, and I have memories of, I had to be there for a long time because there were some complications, but I remember a lot of memories of Dave not even being there. You know, the maybe out of the, there was days he'd be gone for whole days. Fast forward to our latest child where he like slept on the floor of our hospital bed and never left my side. You know, so there's the difference right there.
Well,
you were with Todd at our apartment getting high when I was in the hospital with our newborn baby, who was, and not only did we have a newborn, but she was like incredibly fucked up in the NICU.
She was incredibly fucked up.
Well, she had a lot of problems, and I mean, she's fine now, but, and I was by myself. And because I was really enjoying my morphine drip from my C-section.
Did you have a morphine drip?
Oh my gosh. And not only that, but our hospital was going out of business. So I had inconsistent nurses. So every time they came in, I'm like, oh, I didn't get my Percocet. So I was like, you know, I felt okay. But now again, looking back, Dave wasn't really there.
I was there intermittently, and also because it was like an old Catholic hospital, they were like, I couldn't sleep there, but I didn't want to. I wanted to get drugs. I wanted to get high. I was nervous.
Then with all of this going on, imagine all of us then leaving the hospital. I think I stayed there for like, what, 6 days? I mean, there was a lot of problems. And now we're back in this shithole apartment, you know, and now Dave has a full-blown, you know, drug problem going on. Todd's, you know, coming over all the time bringing drugs, which, you know, kind of sucked that happened, you know, because he was a good friend of mine. And, and so that's what happened up until the point where I walked in and saw Dave using drugs.
But what are you running? That's like a big story. Like on my end, it was like, I remember it was like, I was using 3 days a week, but like I was squirrely about it. Like I would feel like I needed to get high on the third day, and like, and I would try to like map out my day so that at like 9 o'clock at night, you would be asleep and I could get high.
And you remember Todd used to come check on me?
Yeah.
Cause he was like my brother, you know, I had a lot of resentment toward him for a long time about this, but the baby would be in her crib and I'd be in bed and Todd would come back and go, Lenny. And I'd be like, hi, Buzz. You know, he'd like jump in bed with me and we'd hug. Like he was like my brother, you know, and he'd be like, let me tuck you in. It sounds stupid, but we lived together for years and he'd give me a kiss, you know, like a brother.
Jesus Christ. What's going on?
But ultimately what he was doing was making sure that I was asleep. Because then he wanted to go back and they were waiting for me to go to bed so that they could use.
Yeah, and that was
so incredibly fucked up, you know?
It was incredibly fucked up. And it was many, many, many nights of that.
Yeah.
And then it all came to a head on one night where Linda and I had had dinner and I hadn't been able to connect with the drug dealer. But, like, I was the kind of customer that would pay extra for the drug dealer to come out if I needed him to or whatever. And I remember we were, like, we had eaten dinner, and I was so itching to get high that I had had this little Dominican guy come out to Queens with dope. But I needed an excuse to get out of our apartment, and we had laundry waiting in the laundromat. So I said to Linda, I need to go get the laundry. Then I had the guy take the train, and I timed it. Like, somehow I fucking timed it perfectly, which is, like, that would never normally happen. Mm-hmm. Where, like,
it's funny the way things happen, right?
I'm leaving the laundromat, and the drug dealer shows up on the steps, and I buy probably a bundle of dope from him, and I pay him extra to come out to Queens, you know. And he goes back, and I go upstairs, and I, like, dealing with Linda, like, just hoping she falls asleep so I can get high because I was
kind of everybody shit. Just wanted me to fall asleep.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
And listen, like, I feel like this weird need to defend myself in these situations, but I was a terrible drug addict.
But I also feel like at that point, you know, Because I don't have a memory of it. I have a memory of that actually being, like, earlier in the day. Like, the baby was asleep, but I was still awake. And I actually feel like at that point you had gotten so sloppy with your using that you didn't even, like, wait anymore for me to go to sleep.
Well, that's the thing. It was like this. It was, I remember the night The Bachelorette was on.
Like, yeah, I think I was watching that in the other room. You were only, like, one room over. I was awake. I wasn't asleep.
But very, very often when Linda would watch TV, like, 15 minutes in, she'd pass out on the couch.
Right.
And I was desperate to get high.
Right.
So, like, Linda was watching The Bachelorette. She was eating, like, an ice cream sundae. And, like,
really?
Yeah.
Am I that kind of?
Yeah, you're that kind of.
You're going to paint me like that?
I'm going to paint the picture. She was, you know, in her robe.
I was actually watching a documentary film.
On Bachelorettes and their preparation to meet their ideal man. But so, like, she was still awake. And I went and I shot up in the bathroom.
No, I was in the back room.
No, I shot up in the bathroom.
I didn't know this.
And then, or maybe I shot up in the back room. Maybe I don't know. And then I waited until you fell asleep so I could do it again. But I waited there with the spoon and the needle in my lap. And Linda got up and she came. We had an office in the back of the room and she came to the, I think I told this story on Dopey. Yes, it was in the office.
It was not an office.
It was my office.
Okay.
I had a desk in there. whatever. It was the drug den of the apartment.
Right. Yeah, well, it was.
It was. I feel...
And your sleazy fire escape.
I feel the need to defend myself, but I really shouldn't.
I don't know why.
You know, because I was as bad as you could be, you know. Anyways, she walks into the room. And I'm lying there, and the needle and the spoon are on my lap, but Linda doesn't see them. And she's like, good night. And I'm sure she can see them. And she's like, good night. And I'm like, good night. And she's like, aren't you going to give me a kiss? And I thought she could see them. And I said, I really fucked up. And you were like, what? And I picked it up, and she was like, what is that?
No. I have a different memory.
All right,
story.
So tell me your memory.
I was going in. I said, good night. And he's like, good night. And I'm like, then I go to open, because you had the door shut. So I start opening the door to, like, physically see you. And you started pushing the door shut. And I said, what?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, open the door. And you're like, no, I can't open the door. I'm like, Dave, what are you doing? Open the door. And you're like, I can't. You're like, and then you open the door and you're like, I'm using drugs. I actually have I should read my journal entry.
I wish I had it. I think we can pass on the journal entry.
No, but because I wrote it in the journal like that within that week, I know exactly, that's exactly what happened. He said, I'm using drugs. And then I said, what? And then I looked in and then I saw all the paraphernalia and then I said, like, and it's so funny just to share where I was at. The second I saw the drugs and he said, I'm using drugs, obviously my world was crashing on me, but I felt so relieved because I knew, like I mentioned before, like you knew something was wrong. It was almost kind of like, I'm not fucking crazy. And like everything made sense. And I was like, I just felt this sense of like, crazy anger. And, you know, I couldn't feel the anger and sadness yet. I just felt this relief, like,
you were right.
Everything makes sense. And I just said to him, I said, get the fuck out. And then he wouldn't, and he's like begging me, no, begging me and chasing me around the house and trying to get me to talk to him. And I remember I ran out of the apartment.
You left.
And I ran to the Astoria Park, which was across the street, and I called a friend. And then I called my parents and I called my dad, who I was a little scared to call because he's a little bit of a tough dude. And he's like, tell him to get the fuck out, and I'm coming right now. My parents live on Long Island, and my dad like jumped in the car, and then I called Alan and said, you need to come get Dave out of the house because my dad's gonna be here. And so by the time I got back to the apartment, Dave's dad was there.
No, I took the
right?
I know I just
or
left.
Did you just leave?
I just left.
I remember seeing your dad coming over at one point, and so me and the baby, you know, waited for my dad to get there. And the next day I left, I moved out like the next day.
Because I think you saw him the next day when we were getting stuff.
I saw his dad the next time he was getting, because you know, the reality was all of the pieces, like, all at once came together, and it just made so much sense. And then once I got to my parents' house, me and the baby moved to my parents' house.
Our baby.
Sorry. See, I'm feeling like it's very intense stuff. It's hard to talk about. But once I moved out to my parents' house, then the sadness set in because I did love him. And, like I said before, I knew there was so much more to Dave than what this was. And, you know, and also we had this, and he also was a really good father. Like, you were so good with Nora. And
even then I was?
Yes. When you held her. I mean, even within all of that, you could just, you know, you weren't a bad person. You just were very sick. But I didn't know. At that time, I was just like, fuck you. Angry, mad, sad. And I just, you know. And once I got to my parents' house, you know, I worked in Manhattan, so my whole life went down the toilet. I'm living with my parents. I'm commuting to the city. I had however old she was. What was she, like 4 months old at that point? 4 or 5 months old?
Yeah.
So it was a lot, you know? It was a lot. And, like, then there's so much more to the story. I feel like we could go, like, there's a whole other chapter of, like, after. But that's the main, you know, that's the story. That's the story.
But after is when, like, I really bottomed out. You know, after...
Oh, yeah. Then you... He would show up for supervised visitations at my parents' house. And him and I still managed to maintain a friendship. And we'd get him from the train, and he would look like death. Once he came out with, like, a black eye and, like...
I had walked into a wall.
You walked into a wall. I think you got arrested. Did you get arrested at one point?
Yeah.
I mean, so every time I pick him up from the train, I'd be like, oh, my God. And he was – because his use was, like, off the charts at that point.
I was using, like, hundreds – I was using, like, $300 a day. I was, like –
He would come out to see Nora for a supervised visitation, and he'd be nodding out on my parents' couch. And I'd be at work, and my mom would be like, Dave was, like, falling asleep playing with Nora. She had no clue about what that was. She's like, Dave was falling asleep playing
even
with
after
Nora.
You had left because I was on dope.
Yeah. So it was just, like – crazy, crazy, crazy.
So then I got better, and we had another baby, and we bought a house.
The end.
Stay strong, Dopey Nation. And Trudel. What else do you have to... I mean, like, the story
there's
obviously...
There's just so much, you know. There's so much, but, like, the point is that it's been how many years now that we've been together, you've been clean, we have a house, we have a new baby, we have a beautiful... 8-year-old daughter, and
I guess we've only been back together for a little
years.
More than 3 years.
3 years, yeah. You know, and there was a lot of like.
But we had started getting back together 4 years ago. You remember that? There was some picture we just saw that was from 4 years ago.
But is that when we went on that trip, and then you had the slip up?
Yeah, but there's something else. Like, we've been together like 3-4 years
right.
since then. But we weren't together for 3 or 4 years before that, but we were kind of here and there.
We were dating other people, but we always liked each other and cared about each other.
Yes, we liked each other. But we managed to, you know, because I got sober, like, you came around, basically.
Yeah, because you were a different person. You were the person that I always knew, you know, was, you know, you were who you are without drugs fucking it up. And, It's an incredible thing, you know, and I understand, but listen, we have to give ourselves credit, both of us. It's been a lot of work.
It's been a ton of work.
You know, I mean,
it's been a ton of, I always talk about it. When I talk about it, I always compare our story to, like, the story of, like, you know, you hear about, like, an Indian couple that, like, was arranged to be married and then they met and it wound up being this amazing match. I always see us as this sort of, like, successful arranged marriage for some reason.
Arranged through baby?
Arranged through baby and recovery. Like, even when we had the baby, like, there was no reason for us to be together. But once we had the baby... And also, I think, like, you know, I got way closer to Nora than I had expected to get with her for
right.
some reason. Like,
right, you did.
Like, our bond was, like... just way stronger than I had anticipated it
being.
Because
you were a very good father.
And then...
I mean, even when you were using... I mean, I guess I think this is important. Even when you were using, like, a ton of heroin after I had left, Dave still never missed a visitation. No. I mean, yes, you would come out like high and nodding out and with black eyes and all fucked messed up. But he still always came and made sure he was still like responsible.
I also paid for everything.
And was always paid for, you know, the child support, or, you know, gave money for anything she needed, if she needed clothes. I mean, so he was always you were still a good father, even though, you know.
I was getting high.
I mean, it's so easy to say. And that was the thing. You know, my friends would obviously, like, disliked him and was like, why even, you know, just be done with him. Just go to court. Get full custody. Just be done with it. Be done with him. Don't even talk to him. And I never wanted to do that because I knew in my gut, you know, who he was. And I hoped that and I hoped that he would get better. You know, and thank God he did. And how much of that was because of our daughter? You know, that's the million-dollar question. I'm sure it had a lot to do with it, because when you have, you know, it's a selfless act to be a parent.
Well, I saw myself when she was little, like when she was very young and she couldn't talk. It wasn't hard for me to get high. You know what I mean? I would see her 2 days a week. We weren't having conversations.
Right, she's so little.
I felt like I could get away with it. It wasn't a thing. But as she got older, it became very clear that I didn't want to be – I couldn't be that person to her. I needed to actually be her father.
Right.
I couldn't be all fucked up and be her father. It wasn't going to work, you know, and – So I decided that that had to change, you know, and I wound up relapsing on weed. And then, like, it became, like, you know, I wasn't sure that Linda and I were going to be able to put it back together. But I knew that Linda and I being together with our kid would be better than any other scenario. You know what I mean? Like, the idea of us winding up with other people when we could just as easily wind up together. Like, why create this ridiculous situation,
right?
You know, when
and you fought for us to be together as a family very, very, very hard.
Yeah, I fought.
Because there was times where I met other people and I, you know, like, there was quite a few times where that didn't seem like it was going to happen. And Dave really, really fought. And I loved him, so it wasn't like, oh, my God, get lost. But he really fought for us to be a family, and he really valued us being a family. You know, remember, you used to always say that. And now looking back, you know, he was 100% right. And we have this incredibly beautiful family.
Hard earned, you know,
it was hard.
Like, it's like almost like funny, like it's ridiculous to think about, but I saw it then, you know what I mean? Like when, you know, and I was not perfect, and like I would date other people. I didn't care about it. I just dated other people. So like,
because I was,
no, because like, what was I going to do? Not date? Just go crazy? Like go crazy about it? Like I needed to do that, but I didn't care about it. You know what I mean? I never like had a relationship where I was like, you know, or maybe I had a couple, but the point was like, all I wanted to do was put our family back together, and I fought really hard to do it.
You fought really hard for it. You really did.
And then you came around for some reason. It was after, like, that crazy...
It's because the Ativan ran out.
I fought for it, but you obviously fought for it, too. I mean, you can give me all the credit, but it wouldn't have come together if we hadn't both come together.
Right.
And none of it would have worked out if I hadn't gotten sober, you know? And I mean, like, whatever, man. It's like... My sobriety saved my life. My sobriety saved our family. It's like my sobriety made Dopey work. It's only because like things can happen besides me worrying about getting high. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if I'm getting high, all I worry about is getting high and nothing else can happen. But if I'm not worried about getting high, I can worry about how are we going to have a good life? How can the show be good? You know,
there's no room in your life for that.
For what?
For getting high. You know, think how busy you are. Every second is so busy. Imagine how you would be a father, be a homeowner, work full time, commute to the city. I mean, how could you do any of that if you were even smoking weed? I mean, even like the fact that you don't do anything is pretty incredible. You don't smoke cigarettes. You don't smoke weed. You never were a drinker. But I mean, you're just such a straight shooter.
Well, I think that giving up cigarettes was a huge thing.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But for
I
this,
I still have my a glass or two of wine when I've had like, you know, a really freaking stressful day, and I think it's so incredibly strong to be sober, to not be able to have that little, you know, respite with a couple drinks. I think it's so incredible that, you know, you get by in other ways, and you don't need to go to
because it would be impossible for me to have a little bit of anything.
Right.
If I smoked weed, I'd smoke weed every day. Right. If I took pills, I'd eventually take pills every day. I never liked drinking, so it wasn't a thing.
So you have to find other ways.
Cigarettes. I can have an occasional cigarette. I couldn't have an occasional cigarette. That's mm-hmm. the thing.
Right.
I'm going to read a voicemail, or I'm going to read an email. Excuse me. Actually, you can read it. It's weird because you read this email.
Okay.
It's weird. I got it like last week, but I don't think this listener knew that Chris died.
Dear Dave and Chris, I've recently turned into a fan of your guys' podcast. My friend Aubrey got me into listening to it. I thought I'd share about my current adventure, which is turning into a pretty crazy story. So first, a couple facts. I'm a 19-year-old trans man from the middle of nowhere in Ohio, and in the past 2 days, I've traveled...
Aubrey was one of our interns who never did anything, I'm assuming, because how many Aubreys are there, and this Aubrey lives in Ohio?
In the past 2 days, I've traveled almost 1,000 miles high as a kite, road tripping to the West Coast. Monday, I went to work, or at least I got up at like 4 a.m. to drive to work. I never actually made it on the job, which is probably a good thing, because I'd been on and off... Kratom and dope for a week because I relapsed. Driving a truck high is never fun. I ended up getting fired from my job and kicked out of my sober living arrangements by noon on that same day. Within the last month, my best friend and my ex-friend have also relapsed. My grandmother, the only real family I had left, passed, and I dumped my abusive girlfriend because she was sexting another guy. Lots of fucked up shit has been going down. Currently, I'm driving to at least Las Vegas, maybe San Diego, and it feels like your show is the only little bit of sanity on this trip. I've had it playing in the background nonstop. Right now, I'm writing from a shady backwoods part of Kansas near the Colorado border, knuckle dusters in my waistband, in the parking lot of the tiniest 12-step club I think I've ever seen.
What are knuckle dusters?
I don't know. The goal of this trip is to either get clean or tank so hard it doesn't matter. If I'm sober by the time I reach Vegas, I might have a place to stay with an old high school friend. I've got no family to speak of, no job, no house, unless my car counts, and almost no money. I've been getting as high as humanly possible in some self-destructive last hurrah. All I've been doing is driving and using, hitting the occasional meeting, and sleeping in Walmart parking lots. The cash lady in St. Louis this morning told me to go to church and find God. I guess that's what I got for stumbling in at 4 a.m. just buying Mountain Dew, distilled water, and aluminum foil. This trip started with shooting dope. I think my tracks might be getting infected and has developed into a mess of smoking and drinking mass amounts of Kratom, tripping on Benadryl, drinking vanilla extract for the alcohol, and huffing insane amounts of gasoline, butane, and duster. Crazy shit like usual. On the upside, I hit Denver, Colorado tomorrow. I guess I'll finally bite the bullet and try weed for the first time. I've never got around to it. Seems like the perfect place to. This podcast's dope, pun totally intended. If you guys care to hear more, I'll keep sending updates. I've done some pretty whacked out things in my life, and this might be the icing on the cake. I really am on the highway to hell right now. Regards, Winston H.
Well, wow. Winston H., that's a fucking hardcore...
That's powerful.
Email. We would love to hear updates, and I'm sorry to tell you that Chris died. That's got to be a weird thing to listen to the show and not know.
Right.
But I always wanted to have you on the show, Lynn, and what do you think?
I'm really glad that I got to be on the show.
Why are you glad?
Because I think the show is incredibly powerful and important, and after Chris passed away, which was so devastating and just unbelievable, to see the Dopey Nation page come up that I'm on and I look at quite a bit, and just to read the outpouring of love,
it made me. What do you think about it?
It made me realize, you know, how important this medium is, and I just really admire the fans. I admire, you know, I admire you and Chris so much for what you've done.
You do?
Yeah.
How come you never tell me about this admiration?
I was saving it for the...
I was saving
it for when I was a guest.
Wow.
No, and I'm proud of everyone who's you know, a part of this, who listens to this, who's trying hard to stay clean. You know,
how about when Todd died?
Oh, my God.
How terrible.
Todd passing and then Chris passing. It was like...
Talk about that. Tell that story about it.
I still can't wrap my brain around it.
Give the eyewitness view from the house about that.
Oh, my gosh. Of just what... It just... Todd was my best friend and Dave's best friend, and then Chris was Dave's best friend, and you know, Chris and Dave were like girlfriend boyfriend. They texted nonstop. Like, I know just constantly. I'm like, Chris, like, they talk, they text, they were in communication 24/7. I mean, they just loved to talk to one another. And so when he passed away, I actually got, I didn't get scared that Dave was going to relapse, but I got very scared that something was going to happen to him, that he was going to have a total
breakdown.
And plus, we had a newborn baby, and we lived in a new house. So it was just the most horrible thing ever. And they were just two incredibly beautiful spirits. And I could get, you know, emotional.
But when Todd died... Linda was, we were giving the baby a bath. We're in the kitchen, and me, Linda, and Nora were washing the baby. And we got a call from Linda's friend, who is Todd's friend. And, like, you know, I was numb to both of the news.
Yeah.
To hearing about both of them, I was just fucking totally numb. And, like, the reason that they died is because they used, you know, like, I struggle with...
We always kind of knew... Not to say we always kind of knew this would happen with Todd, but Todd just didn't care about getting better. Todd didn't pretend to be clean. You know, like, Todd didn't... So not to say that wasn't incredibly shocking and devastating, but it felt a little bit different than with Chris. That just was just a complete and total shock. You know, I mean, Dave was shocked to the point that after Dave found out, he started texting Chris and calling him to, like, talk to him. And I looked at him and I said, Dave, do you understand what's going on? Like, he just texted him a matter of hours before where he said he was fine and he was in bed and he'd call him later. I mean, so that was very different from Todd, who was just kind of, like, cut off from everybody and was like, you know. You know, I don't know. It's different, but ultimately, it's not different. It's the same. It's the same shit.
They both died because they couldn't stop using, though. You know, and that's just the truth of it. They both died because they couldn't stop using. Todd, like, refused to stop using, and Chris refused to just keep going on in his recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I feel. Obviously, just devastated by both of them dying, and
I'm very sad that I never got to meet Chris. Like, it's sad doing this right now with you because there's so many times I was like, I'll just call in, and Chris and Dave were like, but then we knew we would have so much fun if we all are, you know, we wanted to do it together, and it just, I'm like looking at the empty chair next to Dave and feeling like he should be sitting there.
He would probably be sitting there across, but it would have been, or maybe he'd be sitting where you're sitting and you'd be sitting there, but, like, it would have been better. And, you know, obviously the show is going to be much different without him, and I'm doing my best to keep it going. And appreciate all you guys listening. You know, I always would say it to Chris, like, you know, it was so corny to hear an artist say, we're nothing without the fans, but, like, the truth is, like, we're nothing without you guys. I mean, if you don't listen to the show, nobody listens to the show.
And I also told Dave, because I know Dave really wants this podcast to be fun, you know, to make, you know, addiction recovery work, you know, fun. So people aren't calling in and being like, ugh, like depressed and like, you know.
But, I didn't want it to be preachy. But I didn't want it to be sanctimonious. I didn't want it to be depressing. Right. I wanted it to be fun and
but
funny.
But something that I think Dave's been struggling with a little bit is that after Chris passed away, you know, it's okay for it to also get a bit serious for a while. I mean, you know, it is also a very serious, you know, subject. And, we, you know, we just lost the co-founder of the podcast. So, you know, I know he wants to keep it really fun and light and upbeat. But the reality, like, and like, you know, this, me as a guest, you know, this wasn't the most fun, light, upbeat, you know, interview. But guess what? You know?
It happened.
This is what happens. So that's okay, too. And I'm sure the listeners don't mind that because, it you know, it is what it is. So let's tell a joke.
No, I like Dopey to be honest first. You know, Dopey's going to be has to be honest.
Right.
And then it should be fun, you know, and it's like.
But sometimes
agreed.
It can't be fun. Agreed. That's all I'm trying to say, and that's okay.
No, I hear you. I hear you. But I'm doing my best to keep Dopey fun, and I appreciate everything everybody else is trying to do, like be it send in voicemails or send in stuff, and send in more stuff, like send in little bits to make Dopey fun. You know,
Dave wants it to be fun.
I really want it to be fun. It's like, what the fuck is the
point? Why don't you play a kazoo?
I'm not going to play a kazoo. You play a kazoo. What do you mean? Do you think that'll be fun?
I think that'd be really fun.
I think that'll be annoying. I have I want to play a couple voicemails before we go, and that'll be it. I guess we're done. But, Lynn, I love you.
I love you, too.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for having me.
You had fun? Did you have fun
I think I should say that I had fun, because you really want...
Did you have fun on the show?
I had fun. I'm feeling heavy-hearted, and I'm actually feeling really grateful that I got to share our story, because I think it's important. And, you know, so thank you. Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
What about the praying mantis story? What's your take on the praying mantises?
I think that you forgot praying mantis eggs in our attic, and they hatched, and we have praying mantises everywhere.
When's the last time you saw
them? Are they praying manti or praying mantises?
They're mantises.
Mantises.
Praying mantises.
I haven't seen one in quite a bit. But
how long has it been?
I think it's supposedly they're like, you know, very rare, and we happen to, in our house, we happen to find like 12. I think that's, and Dave's like, oh no, they're coming from the yard.
The most.
No, they're not. They're coming from the attic.
But that's not what happened. You sent me the text. Tell that story. That's a funny story.
What, that I found a praying mantis in the house?
Yeah.
That's the whole story.
And then what did I text you?
You said you thought it came from the garden.
No, and then you sent another one, and I said, uh-oh.
Oh, he wrote, uh-oh. And I said, what do you mean, uh-oh? And he goes, well, I think I forgot some praying mantis eggs up in the attic.
I told the story.
What?
I told the story on Dopey. This is one of the most annoying things, is that when it's like I told the story on the last episode of Dopey that Chris was on.
Yeah.
And Chris was so high, he didn't understand the story. And it was such a good story.
Right.
And he, like, thought I was... He, like, got it confused with Locust.
Locust, right.
And it was... Did you listen to that episode?
Yeah.
And, like, Chris was so out of it. And it was like, I had...
Maybe he just thought it was a boring story.
He didn't. Everybody loves a praying mantis story.
Okay.
Literally.
Well, I don't.
You loved it too. Ugh. Remember later that day you went to see the people, Nora's friends,
yes,
parents, and you
yes.
told the story, and they loved the story. But then
I don't care if other people like it. It was they're creepy.
Well, we haven't seen any, and our house is full of crickets.
Now we have crickets. I don't mind crickets. I can handle, but pregnant.
You can't handle crickets. You can't handle spiders, and you really can't handle bees.
Okay, that's fine.
Anyway,
just the idea of the of eggs hatching in the attic is just. Ugh.
But anyway, the point is that, like, after I told the story on the show, I had these pictures. I had the pictures you sent me of praying mantises. Then I, like, took the picture of the praying mantis
egg. Did you put a Dopey logo over its eyes?
No, but a listener did that. You didn't see that listener picture?
No, I
didn't. The listener picture had a picture of me and Chris, but they replaced Chris with a giant praying mantis.
Stop.
And put the Dopey logo. It's in Dopey Nation.
That's funny.
But then... Before Chris had died, I had like four pictures that I was going to put on Instagram of like the praying mantis that it says, warning, do not leave eggs in house because they might hatch. And like, and then Chris dies, and I'm like, I want to post it anyway, but I never did.
Right.
So, rest in peace, Chris. We love you.
Yes, definitely.
I miss you, and I'll play a voicemail before we go. This is Lucy. I think Lucy or Luce, but that's not her real name. And it's a, you know, female voicemail. This is a very woman-heavy episode of Dopey. So I'm going to close it with that. Stay strong, Dopey Nation. And we say toodles for Chris. And you
toodles.
You say toodles for Chris.
Yes. All toodles right. for Chris.
And here's Luce.
Hey, Dopey Nation. It's Lucy from San Francisco. These are the first words I've spoken today, so sorry if my voice is a little nasty. So I've been a long-time Dopey listener since episode one. And, you know, I've emailed Dave a little bit about how fucking devastated I am over Chris. It's, you know, it's fucking shocking. And, like, so many people I've heard over this tragedy, it feels like I've lost someone super fucking close to me. It's made me realize I haven't had a lot of experience with death. But anyway, I love you, Dopey, Dopey Nation, Dave, Chris. I want to hit you with a little bit of Dopey today. It's like secondhand, firsthand Dopey. It's mainly involving an ex-boyfriend from when I first moved to the city. So I was getting kicked out of the place I was living, and I happened to meet this guy, a friend of a friend. The first warning sign should have been when I went over to his house, and he was like living in a living room of a place, but like had these like sort of cardboard walls set up around a space like barely bigger than a bed, and then you would sort of like move one of the cardboard walls to like get in to the room, and it was just fucking Florida cardboard ceiling clutter with, I mean, I don't even know, like there'd be like ice cream cartons and like a million pens and art supplies and fucking like trippy toy type things. I don't know. It was a mess. And he would like clear off a little corner of his bed to like curl up at night. But he was a really cool guy. Really smart, charismatic. Which kind of made up for the fact that he didn't have all of his teeth. I don't know. I was 22 at the time. This is my first brush with love. So he was an ex-Mormon from Utah who had moved to San Francisco to go to an intensive rehab for heroin. So when I met him, I think he was supposedly maybe 3 years clean from heroin. Anyway, we end up dating for 2 years. And it's good. It's pretty good. I think it's what I'll call my first love. So I'm going to tell you about the decline, though. Maybe a year, year and a half into our relationship, I find out that my ex-heroin addict, 100-pound dream boy, is a very current meth head. I know that's not a good term, tweaker, excuse me. He's an IV meth user and has been the whole time I've known him. And for, I think, pretty much since straight out of him getting out of rehab. So, you know, my mom's in the program, and I remember her saying, she loved him, she met him, but I remember her saying, you know, it is odd that he's not in the program or anything. You know, he drank a little bit. He didn't really like to drink, but he smoked, and he wasn't working a program. And I remember her kind of giving a little warning at the beginning, but you know, he's a good guy. He's charismatic as ever. He's a funny dude. So anyway, this story takes place at the end. The last summer we were dating, I called it like the farewell tour. I would go off to work and he would be in my room all day, I guess fucking shooting drugs, but I was naive enough not to think that was what was happening. And I have roommates too, like it's San Francisco, so it's fucking expensive. So I guess he would just like stay in my room all day so as not to bother anyone. But I would come home and he'd be there, and you know, things were getting a little long in the tooth. I was kind of turning a blind eye to the fact that I knew he was using, I don't know what that's called. Chris would know the clinical term for that. God damn it. So eventually it was just, eventually he was like moving. He was moving back to Utah. So I'm like, okay, sweet. This is it. My feelings are kind of dried up at this point. So I remember he rents this big black truck and he loads all of his shit into it. Like I was saying, it was a lot of shit. A lot of random, pointless shit. And he's gonna drive it out to Utah, which he does. But then in some weird tweaker version of reality, he has to return this rental truck to San Francisco. So he turns right back around once he gets to Utah and comes back to quote unquote return the car, and then I don't know, fly back to Utah. And his plans were always a little odd, and I think his parents were footing the bill for a lot of this shit, so you know, he could live in his fantasies a little bit. So he comes back and he calls me and he's like, hey, let's you know, let's do it again, let's say goodbye. I'm like, oh fuck, all right, well the kid has a flight scheduled out of here, so okay, this is, you know, this is it. So he picks me up and we go get some food. He gets a burger that he doesn't touch at all. And then we go over to Baker Beach and it's just fucking lasting forever. And I'm like, okay, like let's get on with it. I've said goodbye to you 50 fucking times this summer. Like, let's do it. Let's go. I don't remember how I end up actually getting away from that situation that particular time. But basically what ensues is a 72-hour stock fest, wherein this big black truck is just haunting the hell out of me. It's circling my block. It's parked outside. I come home and there's like this crazy like tweaker booby trap set up around my house. Like there's like a trash can half leaning on my back sliding glass door, and like boxes like stacked up like as if he's trying to get on the roof. And I don't know, there was like a bowl of water or something outside the front gate. Just like weird, like just nonsense. Just a bunch of fucking nonsense. So shit's starting to get weird. And I remember I leave to go to work one day. And I have to walk to the bus. So I'm walking like two blocks to the bus. And he fucking pulls up beside me and is like, hey, you want a ride? And I'm just getting so fucking freaked out at this point. Like, I don't think that he's dangerous, but shit's getting weird. I'm telling him, you know, go, what's going on? Go home, please. And I've been calling the cops. I mean, this has been lasting like 2 days where this truck is just not leaving me alone. Oh, and then another weird trash can thing. He like, I think this was one of his pretenses for coming over, is that he had this gift for me. And I refused to go outside. There's a big commotion and shit. He said, at one point he sends me a picture with a needle in his arm, which he knew would, you know, jar me because I'm pretty needle phobic. And to me, that was like a call of like, oh shit, he's on heroin. Oh my God, he's gonna fucking die. But it was just meth. You know, he's just pulling with my heartstrings on that one. Anyway, but they get trash cans. So I go outside. And there's this fucking crazy ass like kitchen trash can that's covered in like collage shit. I just looked at the time and I see I'm going over. Anyway, long story short, I show up to my work one day and there's like a cut off branch. I worked at a PI office at this time, private investigator out in the Castro. I was like copy editing. And I show up and on the steps, it was a really small office. It was just like me, the owner, and another young chick. I show up on the steps and there's like this cut branch with this like big blossom, like blossoming thing, and this creepy note that's like all I wanted to do is talk, and like just this weird like hieroglyphic type shit. So he ends up like waiting around on my lunch. And I'm pretty freaked out at this point. Like, I've filed police reports and stuff, but they can't really do anything until something happens. It's just beautiful. So my boss is, like, this huge fucking Italian private investigator dude. And he ends up calling my ex. I can't remember if he called him or if he... or if the ex called me and then he intercepted it, but he ends up giving him a piece of his mind, like, go the fuck home. And they get in a verbal fight, and I don't know. Anyway, eventually I hear from his parents that he is on a flight home to Utah, and I'm able to rest a little easier. However, that was not the last time I've seen him. He's shown up since out of the blue like a fucking year later. But anyway, I don't know, that's a little dopey for you. Stay strong, toodles.
I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder would it do me any good. Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be so good, so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And I wanna take a ride up in the sky. Watch as airplanes just pass me by. And I wanna see a Lear jetliner take a dive. Just to show all of these people what it means to be alive. But I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be so good, so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And my shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. Shadows getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. And I wonder would they pay it any mind when I leave this busted city far behind. I'll take the high road however far it winds. Because peace and love are very, very, very hard to find. And I want to be good so bad. Want to be good so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. Damn it, all these suckers make me mad. And it's all I ever had. And it's all I ever had. Suckers make me mad, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, 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 and these suckers make me mad, and it's all I ever had, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had.